with us this morning, I'll just warn you, I'm not the preacher, so don't hold it against the congregation if this is awful. Just teaching you some patience, that's all. Before we get started, just a couple of public service announcements. On Wednesday, we had a little misleading information. I had a little trouble with my left eye. That sounds familiar, doesn't it, Donna? Anyway, this would have been really convenient back when I first started preaching off and on, and you guys were scary because I can close my right eye and then you will all just pretty much be a blur. I'm a diabetic. My blood sugars have run very high for a very long time, and so I just have a bleed behind my eye. They're going to fix it. Just some injections in my eye. But I had approached Lenny because that's something new to me, and I wasn't sure what an injection in your eye was like and if it would affect my ability to be up here. And unfortunately, I didn't get the injection or have the excuse not to be up here, so you are stuck with me. But Lenny was very willing, very gracious to step in at the last minute, and I think that's a testament to the elders here at this congregation that they can just step right up and fill a spot in short notice. So, nothing major with me. If I take care of it, if I don't take care of it, then you'll all just disappear. So you can nag and you can scold me. I do have some new technology that will help me keep my blood sugars under control, but I don't do well with new things, so I decided not to start it until after we got through this. So that out of the way. Now, I've had some other people ask me questions about Joel. I hired Joel a few weeks back, and so I'll just get it out of the way because I really don't like to repeat myself. Joel is doing awesome. Joel is a pleasure to work with. And one of the things that I just want to say about Joel, and I wish he was here to rake in the praise, Joel has asthma and allergies, and he's working in a cabinet shop, and it is killing him. And I've seen it killing him, but I'm not very coddling, and I'm not very comforting, and so I just waited. And he got so bad that his grandma had to take him into the ER. They put him on prednisone. And the boy never complained. So the young man is a worker, and he takes his responsibilities very serious. We're not sure if he's going to be able to survive working in the cabinet shop, so we're looking for other options for him. But it's been a true pleasure for me to have Joel with me. And then I'll go ahead, since he's here. Nolan's been working with me off and on and has survived very well. Both boys receive criticism very well, work very hard, but more importantly, they handle the abuse that I dish out because I enjoy that stuff. But we just have some excellent young men here. And so, you know, in the future, if they're not working for me and you know of people that are looking, just excellent, excellent young men. Last thing before we get started, I just found out yesterday, so you're going to need to hug Carrie over here because Anna's going to Africa. Anna's going to spend some time down in Africa working in a medical clinic, which is just an awesome and tremendous opportunity, and I can't tell you how proud I am of her because at 52, I still wouldn't leave this country. I don't like new, I don't like strange, and for these young people to be able to step outside of their comfort zone and to go someplace that could be a tad scary to help people and to further their career, I think is amazing. But from a parent standpoint, sending my daughter to go on a 560-mile hike across Spain a few years back, it's agonizing. So we want to help Mama and the family get through this time of missing her and just not knowing, and just wish Anna the best. This morning, so Ted did this for me, so now I can officially say that I've used technology when I preach. That's as far as it's going to go, so get used to seeing that. I'm not a fan. We're going to talk about Joseph this morning. And this was a struggle for me. I was really excited when Lenny came to me and he said, "Do you want to take one of these lessons?" And I said yes, and I didn't ask for permission from my wife because my wife would have said no. She knows how busy I am in life. But I don't get these opportunities very often. I wanted to get up here. I wanted to speak. And then I saw Joseph's name, and I thought, yes, because in the high school class here starting in a week, we're going to go back through a book called Joseph's Cove. And I was fortunate enough. This book was written by Don Bassett. Excellent, excellent study tool that I'm going to throw on the floor. This one is written for young adults. And it's an excellent lesson series. And so we've got these books coming, and we're going to do this in the high school class. And I thought, I'm going to take a lesson out of Larry's book and preach on what I'm teaching on, because that's easier, right? It's not easier. There's 13 lessons in this book. There's 13 different topics from the life of Joseph that we can apply. And then when we read Joseph, I mean, we start in the 37th verse in the Bible, and we go clear to 50. That's a lot of information. That's a lot of lessons. This is not a lot of time. And so I have gone through this lesson. I told my wife this morning, well, it changed again. I have created probably 13 lessons to preach up here, which sounds great, except inside my brain is kind of like a hamster on a wheel. So some of those 13 lessons might show up today, and I might not know where they came from. We're going to do the best we can just to glean just a little bit of knowledge from the life of Joseph. We obviously cannot go through and read the entire text. So if you, for whatever reason, are new to us and you have never, ever heard of Joseph, then I would suggest that you go to Genesis, you start in the 37th verse, and you read the life of Joseph. It's a tremendous story. There are so many things that we can learn and that we can apply to ourselves, ways that we can learn to deal with situations that face us in this life. And I was giving Nolan a hard time at work, and I was quoting Joseph and making an example, and Nolan looked at me and he goes, Dean, not everything in life has to do with Joseph. But then I read the paper yesterday. Did you read the paper yesterday? So down in Texas we had another shooting, which is awful. Right? It is awful that these types of things are happening. And we've had tragedies, and you can be on this side of the gun thing, and you can be on that side of the gun thing, and I don't do politics, so I don't care what side you're on. I don't want to talk about it. What I want to talk about is why. Why this happens. So, you know, we have the guy in Las Vegas that climbs up on a building and does horrible things, different reasons. But young people in schools committing crimes against other young people usually happens because of what? People are mean to them. People are mean to them. And it's allowed. And we have this whole generation of people that don't have a good foundation at home, don't have a godly foundation. And they feel alone, and they feel scared, and they act out. And they act out in ways that they're taught to act out. I can tell you from personal experience that as a young person, for some reason, I just walk around with a bullseye on me. So at a very young age, kid in high school used to beat me up every day on the bus. Just thought it was great. And then he graduated from high school, and I thought, awesome, this is great. He's gone. So another kid decided he's going to take that place. And that went on, and we moved away. We moved to North Dakota, and I thought, well, at least I'm away from these bullies. I didn't want to move to North Dakota. That's a horrible place to be from. But when we moved there, guess what? People were mean. And for the year that we lived there, if I rode the bus, then our bus driver had to take a longer route, hour longer. And so she had two boys. One was a senior in high school. One was a junior in high school. And they had three friends that rode the bus. I was a sixth grader. And so for a year, they beat me on the bus. I didn't come from a warm, loving, cozy home where I felt like I could go home and talk to my parents about this kind of stuff. So my response towards the end of the year, I finally had enough. I cut off a baseball bat. Going to put it in my bag, taken on the bus, and served some justice. Probably would have got hurt. Mom caught it. It got fixed. It got resolved. But I can understand where these kids come from. I'm not condoning it. But these kids live in a world where they feel all alone and they're bullied and they're picked on. Well, I think if young people could go through a study like Brother Don Bassett created, on the life of Joseph. And if we can just glean a few things, we can understand that just a little bit of godly teaching, and maybe we can understand how to deal with these situations where life isn't fair. So we're introduced to Joseph in the 37th chapter of Genesis. And I'm just going to read just a little bit just so we can get a little history. It says, "Now Jacob dwelt in the land where his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. This is the history of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report to his father." Okay, so our first introduction is of Joseph. And what is he doing? He's tattling on his brothers. And in today's world, we think that's bad, right? You know, young people, that's bad. He's a rat. But what was he doing? He was doing what his father asked him to do, wasn't he? "Give me a report on your brothers. How are your brothers tending to my flock?" And what was he? He was very honest, wasn't he? Now we'll read in verse 3. "Now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children." Why was that? Did he love him more because he was the smartest? He was the best looking? It's because he loved his mother. And he was his youngest son, and he was from this woman that he loved more than all. But that created a problem, didn't it? Have we ever seen in our lives favoritism cause a problem? I hear it every time my girls get together. "Well, you love her more. She's the chosen one." You just want to slap them, don't you? I mean, they're great kids. But we have this animosity, this pecking order that we try to push ourselves through. What young people don't understand is that if I compliment Bruce, or I compliment Carl, that's not a negative towards everybody else here, is it? But we're selfish, we're self-centered individuals. So these young men, they're like, "Oh, he loves him more." Then what did he do? He got a coat of many colors. Well, there's fuel to the fire. The kid's a rat. Dad loves him more. Dad's given him more things. So his brothers hated him. We can read on further. Most of us know the story, but his brothers were feeding the flocks in Shechem. I don't know how to say all these words, so you're going to just read along and do the best you can to understand what I'm saying. And Jacob sends him to check on his brothers again. Well, that's awesome. So he goes. It didn't work out very well for him the last time, did it? But he goes to check on his brothers, and his brothers aren't where they're supposed to be. And so he finds his brothers, and his brothers see him from afar off, and they go, "Oh, there he is. There's the dreamer." Joseph had had dreams, and he had told those dreams to his family, and those dreams told his family that in these dreams that I'm going to rule over you, and they didn't like that either. So they see him coming from afar off, and they think, "We're sick of this kid. Let's kill him." And we can read on in the story that Reuben was against killing him. Reuben was wanting to deliver him back to his father. So he convinces him to throw him in a pit. Reuben's not too wise. He leaves. They fell into the Midianite traders. Now he's sold into slavery. So Joseph at age 17 went from being loved, cherished, worshipped, to being thrown into a pit, sent off to a foreign land. At 17. Now, if we can help young people understand, that's pretty awful, right? So what we go through day to day will pass most of the time, won't it? High school seems so ominous, so terrible. It's 4 years. And if it wasn't for Stacy going to church where I go to church, I wouldn't have any contact with anybody I went to high school with. It just passes. It goes away. If we're patient. So we can kind of read on if we want. let's just kind of get to it. So we'll just go through a brief history, because I'm watching that clock back there. We've got Joseph, sold into slavery at age 17. That sounds terrible, right? By age 30, what is he? He's the prime minister of Egypt. Now, he's had some ups and downs in there. He was sold to Potiphar's house. But Joseph continually, all through his life, his struggles, continued to do what? To serve God, to bless God, to glorify God. And what did God do for him? Blessed him back, didn't he? To the point, and I've always wondered about this, to the point that his masters could see that God was working through him. And what that statement does to me is sometimes it makes me feel really ashamed, because I'm not sure that on a day-to-day basis that the people that I'm affiliated with can see God working through me in everything that I do. And that makes me ponder, it makes me wonder, it makes me concerned. But Potiphar sees that this man is blessed, and so he puts him over his whole house. And then what happens? Potiphar's wife shows up. Joseph's handsome. And we can go into that story. We'll touch on it a little bit later. But he lands himself in prison. In prison, what? He thrives as much as you can thrive in a prison. Larry showed us pictures, hasn't he, of some of the jails. I mean, it isn't like what we're facing today. Now, I don't ever want to go to prison, but at least in prison today, you've got cable TV, and you've got weights, and they feed you, and, you know, there are some creature comforts, because we're a little softer than... They were in stone holes carved out of the sides of mountains. But Joseph is put over the top of all of the prisoners, and the prison guard didn't worry about anything that Joseph was in charge of. That's trust, isn't it? You hear that, Nolan? So when I leave the shop, then I'm trying to get Nolan to where I can just not worry about what happens at the shop. He's a pretty good kid. So he's not quite Joseph. You're getting there, though. So Joseph goes through a turn of events, gets out of prison, is blessed enough to be put into a position of power, saves Egypt from starvation from age 33, 30 to 44, pretty young. What's interesting to me is then that we come on and we find out that, you know, he becomes his father and his murderous brother's deliverer. Joseph married an Egyptian woman of the ruling class and lived to enjoy his great-grandchildren. That's a blessing that we're looking for, isn't it? When he died, his body was embalmed as though he had been of the royal house of Egypt. Though he lived 93 years in a land where he was considered a racial inferior. So, he was put into a position of power, but how did the Egyptians view him? Lastly, he was centuries later, his bones were transported back to Canaan, which was foretold early on. But what we want to look at, I mean, there were some highs and there's some lows, and we just want to look at a few points about Joseph and then bring it all together. But Joseph started his life, you know, we're introduced to him, and we find out that doing the right thing does not always lead to physical relief, right? Doesn't always lead to the outcome that you are hoping for or expecting. Telling the truth is not always the most convenient thing to do. And yet it's the right thing to do. You know, Joseph did the right thing. He told the truth about his brothers. Got him in trouble. He did the right thing by his father.
Now, I just want you to think, my parents in the room, we got parents, teenagers, you remember being a teenager? So, we will send our young people to do something, and they will go to do that something, but if something hinders them from doing it, that's where it stops, right? So Joseph could very easily, when he got to Shechem, said, well, my brothers aren't here, and went back home.
His life would have ended much differently, wouldn't it? But he continued on, he looked for his brothers. When he was in Potiphar's house, here's this young man who's been put over everything, and here's Potiphar's wife. And it doesn't say much about Potiphar's wife. We can understand that she's not really a very good person, because she is pursuing Joseph, trying to get Joseph to lie with her daily. Now, I've never been put in that position. But for a young man of age 17, and we won't go into all the scientific facts and all of the gruesome details, but to be pursued, we can imagine that this ruler, that this governor, if you will, probably had a fairly attractive wife. But he was pursued, and what did he do? He fled. He resisted, and he fled. And what did it get him? So he did the right thing, and where did he land? He landed in prison. When we do the right thing, so this lesson, I just want us to think about ourselves. When we do the right thing and it goes wrong, what's our reaction most of the time? Well, I'll never do that again. Right? You know, I don't coach anymore, so I don't relate a whole lot to soccer like I used to. You're welcome. But I'm a worker. I've been a worker, a hard worker my whole life, so I relate a lot, you know, in that regard. And I'll have young people work for me, and they'll work for me for a little while, and they'll think that they're doing pretty well. I'm usually fairly good at pointing out that they're not. But they'll get to a point where they want what? More money. I'm ready for a raise. I think I should get a raise. Do you know what young people do today when they want a raise? They quit working as hard. Isn't that weird? You give them a list of things that they need to do to receive that raise, and they do them for like 3 days, 4 days, and then they should see a raise, right? And they don't get that raise right away. Maybe they got to wait for a pay period. Maybe they got to wait for, you know, a few more improvements. Maybe they're not doing as well as they think they're doing. No one has not asked me for a raise, by the way. No one's just happy that he's not working with a bunch of teenage girls. So he's good. But they quit working. That's my 32 years of experience, is that people quit working hard because they don't feel like they're getting out of that situation what they should. So from age 17 to age 30, now Joseph spent 2 years in prison. He spent 11 to 12 years roughly in Potiphar's house. Now he was in a pretty good position, but he was owned, wasn't he? And I can't remember the word, and I couldn't find the word. I had the joy of sitting through this class with Jerry Bassett. And anytime Jerry Bassett teaches a class, you're learning all kinds of words. But we look at Joseph in Potiphar's house, and we think, well, he's got it pretty good, right? The word slave that's used to describe Joseph is the same word, and Jerry explains it so much better, and, you know, he does it so easy that you think you don't need to take notes, and that's not right. But it's the same word that you would use for a tool. So a slave was a tool. And when you break a handle on a shovel, what do you do with the shovel? Bob would put a new handle on it. I could buy a shovel at Ace Hardware for $5.99. I just go buy a new shovel, right? You just chuck it when that tool's not any good anymore. That's a tremendous amount of pressure, isn't it? So even if you're doing well, look how quickly it can go bad. You know, so we can look at Joseph's life and think, well, you know, he had these, but was Joseph where he wanted to be? Was Joseph really doing what he wanted to be doing? And yet, he continued to stay the course and to work very hard and to continue to be blessed by the Lord. We like comfort, don't we? We don't like to be uncomfortable. We don't like to have young people, especially. We don't like to have people angry with us. Larry's been really good at pointing this out. We've studied it before, but you know, basically, we got to learn that life isn't fair. But God, this is what I love about this. God is always fair. I like rules and boundaries and knowing what this action gets me. And in the world, that's not the case, is it? So no one can work really hard for me, do an excellent job, and yet I might promote Paul or Joel to a position that Nolan wanted. Now, is that a maybe Nolan deserved it in his mind. Life isn't always fair, but God is fair. God says, if you do X, Y, and Z, I will bless you. You can count on that, can't you? In 1 Peter 2, 19 through 21, we read, "For it is a sign of grace if a man, desiring to do right in the eyes of God, undergoes pain as punishment for something which he has not done. What credit is it if when you have done evil, you take your punishment quietly? But if you are given punishment for doing right and take it quietly, this is pleasing to God. This is God's purpose for you because Jesus himself underwent punishment for you, giving you an example so that you might go in his footsteps." So we see it as a bad thing when things don't go exactly the way that we want them to go, don't we? I must have done something wrong. It must be horrible. My boss is a jerk. Whatever it is. His boss is a jerk. But ultimately, we're being told right here in 1 Peter that we should expect a little bit of discomfort, shouldn't we? Christ also added over in Matthew 5, 11 through 12, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil things against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad." That's hard. I'm going to rejoice when people talk bad about me. "For great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." That verse right there kind of tells you what the end is going to be of the lesson, really, is that, you know, we can read Joseph's life, and for those of you who are very literal, I'm kind of a literal person, we can read Joseph's life and see, okay, if I obey God, I'm going to have all these great things happen to me in this life. Are we promised that through the story of Joseph? But what are we promised? Great and wonderful things beyond our imagination for a life of service here on earth. Do you ever read these verses and then ask yourself, because most of the suffering that I endure here in this world is self-inflicted. It really is. I'm not going through life just being persecuted. I got a little problem with my eye. Why I didn't take care of myself. I got a bad back. Why? Because I picked up stuff I shouldn't pick up. I got anxiety and stress. Why? Because I don't know how to say no to customers, and I have way more work than I possibly should have. All of those things are on me. But I don't have people lining up at that door waiting for me to make a mistake so that they can just rake me over the coals. I don't have people not doing business with me because of my moral principles. And sometimes that makes me wonder. Am I a little too worldly? Am I a little too quiet about my beliefs? Because what I'm reading here is if I am living a godly life and I am doing all of the things that I should be doing at some point in my life, and maybe it's coming. We don't know. Just enjoy the day. But maybe it's coming that persecution will befall me. It might be after this lesson. Who knows? I'll fake a low blood sugar and run right out that door, though. So it's always good to have an out. There's just something for us to think about as we look at the life of Joseph. Another lesson that we can take from Joseph is that God will make all things work together for good. When Joseph was brought out of prison, and Pharaoh says to Joseph, it's in verse 15, 16 of chapter 41, I hear that you can interpret dreams, and I'm having these dreams. Now, you've been sold into slavery. You have been thrown in prison for doing the right thing. You've been in prison. You've been forgot about in prison by the baker. That's in there if you want to read it. And now you have this opportunity. You're standing before Pharaoh, and he asks you, so Anna, here that you can interpret dreams. It would be tempting to just say, yes, I can. I'm pretty good at it. Well, what was Joseph's answer? Joseph says, it is not in me. So after all this has happened, he's got this chance to shine, or as we studied on Wednesday night. By the way, if you weren't here on Wednesday night, you missed an excellent lesson, and it has been recorded. Tonight, no one's going to speak, and I'm really looking forward to that. So if you don't normally come on Sunday nights, please come. But his response is, God will give Pharaoh the answer. Now, I brought up Bob's lesson because in Bob's lesson, we understood and we studied a little bit about Abraham getting frustrated and scolding the people and striking the rock to give them water and basically taking the glory from God. And he was punished for that. So Joseph gives the glory to God. Not knowing the outcome of what that was going to be, he gave glory to God. Pharaoh then says to Joseph, inasmuch as God has shown you all this, there is no one as discerning and wise as you. You shall be head over my house. Even Pharaoh understood the blessings of God. Let's turn over to Romans, the 8th chapter. There are verses in the Bible that the world likes to take out of context. This is one of them. So it's, be strong and be of courage. Do not fear nor be afraid, for the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you. That's the wrong verse. And we know that all things work together for good to those that love God. All things work together for good. So, I don't know about you, but I've had conversations with people, and they'll be doing the wrong things. And just by doing the wrong things, they'll quote this verse. Or you've got the individuals that they're just making all these plans for their future, what they're going to have in their future, and they'll see right over here in Romans 8:28, it says that God's going to make all things come together for me. Is that what he's saying? That he's going to make everything perfect for you here in this life? Let's read. We'll back up just a little bit in Romans. we'll get this verse into context. The heading at verse 18 says, from suffering to glory. So we can read down that, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectations of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subject to futility, not willing, but because of him who subjected it in hope, because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Not only that, but we also have been first fruits of the Spirit, even when ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, for the redemption of our body. For we were saved in this hope. But hope that is seen is not hope. For why does someone still hope for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we eagerly wait it with perseverance. Likewise, the Spirit also helps in our weakness. We're in a state of weakness when we're in this world because we don't really understand it all. We're just waiting for something that we don't fully understand. We're suffering, but we don't know what to say. And the Spirit, likewise, in our weakness, for we do not know what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself makes intercessions for us with groanings, which cannot be uttered. So God loves us. We're going to suffer persecutions. But he's going to help us to pray for him. Now he who searches the heart knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because he makes intercessions for the saints according to the will of God. And we know that all things work together for good to those that love God. And we can read on through there, but if we take that and we back it up just a little bit, we understand that when I go through persecutions, when I go through good times, when I go through loss, when I go through sufferings, when I go through troubles, when I have to get up every day and work hard even if I don't feel like it, when I have to work hard in a marriage, when I have to work hard as a parent, when I have to work hard as a brother and sister, then all of those things, when I keep God in the forefront of my mind, and I strive to serve God each and every day, and I work on my attitude, and I work on my goal, that all of those things are going to come to an end. And we are going to receive that salvation, that blessed home with our Father. That's what we're promised. The rest of it, we just got to do the best we can do. We got to get up and go to work. If we lose our job, we got to get up and find a job. If we become incapacitated where we can't work, then we've got other options, don't we? But what has the world taught us that we should do? Well, I need to get on disability so that I can sit at home and watch Dr. Phil and Oprah and Ellen, because she's hilarious. Whatever it is, I need you to take care of me now. I don't have anything else that I can offer you. Oh, poor me. How many times in your life have you seen somebody that struggled just a little bit and they threw their hands in the air and they walked out that door? Well, the preacher said something I didn't like. He scolded me because I only come on Sunday mornings. Hurt my feelings. Maybe he said that, from the pulpit or an elder approaches you and says, I'm concerned about you. And we don't want to be corrected, do we? We don't want to suffer. We don't want to be uncomfortable. We don't want to be burdened. And yet, one of my seven different lessons, and if I looked long enough, I could probably find the verse, talks about that the Lord chastens us because he loves us. And how, as a young person, we will take the chastening of our father or mother, but we'll take that chastening
for a time, because we can understand that it's for our betterment.
Right.
We might not like it, but we get to a point where we're like, all right, I get it. So all the things that Anne has been taught, how to be safe, how to be respectful, how to be honest, all of the concerns, all of that is going to come to this fruition. And so Carrie's going to be able to put her on an airplane with tears in her eyes and send her someplace with some confidence. And when Anna is over there and is faced with things, she's going to go, this is what Mom and Dad are talking about. She's going to understand why they were so worried about keeping her safe and so worried about her making the right decisions as she was coming up through the school system and dealing with opportunities and stepping out on her own. We don't understand that. We understand that, right? But when we're chastened in church, what do? We get our knickers in a twist and we run out the door. Well, he can't say that to me. How dare he attack my character? As a coach, as a dad, as an employer, most of the time when you have a problem, it's because of a different understanding of what's going on. My expectations are different than what you feel like your ability to give me is. The difference there is a young person, or really just about anybody that's unfamiliar with the situation, they only know what they feel like their limitations are. So if I've never ran a marathon, in my mind, what would I say? I can't run a marathon. That's 26 miles. I got a car. Why would I run 26 miles? But if I tell Nolan, you know what? You're going to run a marathon. And I'm going to make sure you can run a marathon. And I push him. Guess what? He will probably be able to run a marathon. He will not like me all the while that I am trying to train him to run a marathon. But he will get there. He will be pushed. He will be chastened. I will scold him for only running 7 miles today when I needed him to run 11 miles. But I was tired. What's our excuse here? So, we did a little count on my phone this last week. It was nuts. And every week is nuts. Monday, I had 22 phone calls. I had 15 text messages, I had 5 emails, and I met with 4 customers, and I measured 2 jobs. All the while trying to keep my boys doing what they're supposed to be doing, and keep enough work in front of them to keep them working. So I could very easily say, you know what guys, I don't have time to be up here, I don't have time to study. I don't have time to study. I have time to get on my elliptical. I have time to clean my garage. But we do that, don't we? We see what's facing us. And we were actually talking about that, me and Sophie, back in class, that it would be really easy. Stress is unhealthy for me, so I could say, well, you know, my blood sugars and my eye and my heart and whatever. But we can make excuses, can't we? And we do. I'm just too busy. I'm tired on Wednesday night. I just can't get It's too hard to get the kids here Sunday mornings for class. Right? Those are just little things. Now let's talk about our teaching the world or our example when we're at the workplace or whatever it is, how we conduct ourselves. We don't want to be scolded, do we? We don't want to be chastened. But we need to understand that suffering, those things that we go through, whether they be uncomfortable, Romans 8:28 tells us that all works together for what? For good. So if we can grasp that, then it's a whole lot easier to take that correction. So when the elders say, hey Dean, can we talk in the office? No. My blood sugar's low. But I can understand that if they pull me into that office to talk to me, it's for good reason. And it's to make me a better me. So that I can be better for you. And I can be better serving God. Lesson 3. There's no excuse
that's good enough to break God's commandments. And we don't even need to read a whole bunch of verses about that, but we make those excuses, don't we? Well, that kind of just made me really mad, and you know, I had to do this. Or my boss never does this for me, so I just have to do this. Or my wife, whatever it is. We make those excuses, don't we? Every one of us. What excuse is there? And now, we looked at Joseph. If you read that whole story, what excuse is there? So would it have been easier for him to just submit to Potiphar's wife? He'd still be living the high life in the house, right? Would it have been easier there? Would it have been easier for him not to tell his dad the truth? I mean, just think about your own life and the excuses that you've made, and then be ashamed. I know I am. There's just a little footnote that says, if God's way of life is important to you, you will find every reason to follow it instead of making excuses not to. Last one that we'll deal with, and then we'll wrap it up. Learn the art of delayed gratification. How many people in there have one of these things in your pocket? If you want to know something, you can know it right now, can't you? If I think, I'd like to have this, I can, during Larry's sermon, I can't because I'm not very smart. But my wife can do it, and I know that Ted or Nolan can show me how. I can just go on eBay and I can order it in just a few days, or Amazon Prime, I can have it delivered to my house. I can have it right now. Right now. We want everything right now. I need you to make me feel better right now. I need to be ready for retirement right now. I need to be thinner right now. Actually, today I need to be fatter because I forgot my belt, and I was fatter when I bought these pants. So, trying to limit my movements. But we want, we expect it right now, right now, right now. That's what the world is. That's why my job is so hard today. Because my customers and my contractors want it right now. Well, I can cut a board right now, but I can't build $40,000 worth of cabinets by tomorrow. But that's what the world wants. As Christians, we want all the benefits of being God's children right now. There's a study, and I think we have to look at it, on why millennials, and if I was young, I'd be offended by being called that term, but why millennials are falling away from the church. Well, you know why? Because they want gratification right now. They need me to stand up here and entertain them. We need to have dance parties, and we need to have food, and we need to do all kinds of fun things, and have these camps, and do all this stuff so that I can be entertained right now. We need to understand that we're not guaranteed that gratification right now. We're going to close with Hebrews chapter 12. I have a lot more notes, but I just looked at the clock. So in Hebrews chapter 11, all the way through there, we're reading about basically the heroes of faith, most of the people that we're going to talk about through these lessons. But in chapter 12, verse 1. So we've heard about the faith of Moses and the faith of the patriarchs and the faith of Joseph and the faith of Jacob and the faith and the faith and the faith. Chapter 12 says, therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. There's your motivation, there's your encouragement, and there's your lesson. We have before us in this book story after story of people of faith and how that faith brought them a reward. Some people quickly, and some people at the end of a very long life, but they were rewarded for their service. And that's our encouragement. When we read about Joseph, or we hear about Abraham, or all these others that we're going to get, and I would just encourage you to come to all of them. Two reasons. One, you need to hear it. Two, these young men, who don't always get up here and speak, deserve to be supported. They deserve it. Love your brethren enough to support them, folks. Now, you all could have stayed home this morning. That would have been all right with me. I'll speak to an empty room. But I want Nolan to know what it's like to speak to a full room. I want James to know what it's like to speak to a full room. To people who are as attentive as you are right now. When we make our decisions, whether or not we will come, whether or not we will serve, whether or not we will be of assistance to one another, let's just remember these heroes of faith. And let's remember the reward that awaits us in the end. If you are with us today, and you have not yet obeyed the gospel, we would encourage you to do so today. It's a wonderful thing. And I will tell you that it brings so much joy to the members around you. I know I'll single out Nolan, I'll single out Anna, but I try not to do this too often, but I cannot tell you how much joy it brings to me to serve the Lord's Supper to Jonathan. I've loved Jonathan forever. That's a great kid right there. Great kid. Was never worried about him making bad decisions or doing wrong things. But it brings, I tear up, Jonathan, every time I get there and I hand you the Lord's Supper and you partake of it. And to have Nick Craig, who's terrified, by the way, stand up here on the table with me and do his first service in front of you, it is amazing. So, young people, if you haven't made that decision, come be a part of the family because we will love you. And then understand the blessings that await you at the end of this world. And know that it will be worth it. But we'll be here for you. If you've fallen away, if you are falling short, if you are like me and you question yourself, then come to us. Let us know. We're taught, confess your sins to one another. Why? Because it's hard to be doing something wrong if everybody knows you're doing it. That's the gist of it. They're going to keep an eye on you. I'm already getting scolded about blood sugars and vision. So, people will love you here. And the Lord, your God, has sacrificed so much so that you can have the benefit, that welcome home in heaven at the end of your life. And amen to that. So if you need the prayers and encouragement of the congregation, please come as we stand together and sing.